Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, thanks for downloading the Nick Bob podcast, giving it a listen. And speaking of downloading, make sure you are doing just that. And in fact, take it a step further. You see that little subscribe button you can click? Just click that button right there. If you can give it a review, give it a rating, really would appreciate that. All that stuff helps. Reminder, you can listen to my podcast on nickbod.com. I know a lot of people can consume their podcasts in a variety of ways. There's just another way if you want to listen to it there. There's a lot of different ways for you to consume it. So really, there's no excuse. Like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to, Nick, I can't find it. No, I don't want to hear that, okay? I don't want to hear that crap. I really, really don't. I am beyond excited to have this guy in the pod. Like, beyond excited. Eric Crouch. Perhaps you've heard of him. Heisman Trophy winner. Former Husker. Former Millard North Mustang. I feel like I've been watching Eric from afar for a long time. So my cousin, Mick Botner, went to Millard North, was played defensive back at Nebraska, really good friends with Eric Crouch. And so I knew about Eric when he was at Millard North. And so when he arrived at Nebraska, I was super excited to be able to watch him play. And I always tell people that in my, this is just me. First of all, he's my all-time favorite quarterback in the history of Nebraska football. And in terms of just pure ability to run the option, he's the best option quarterback I've ever seen. I mean, getting ready to chat with Eric, I was kind of going down the YouTube rabbit hole of different highlights and different stuff. And it's like, man, this dude was it's pretty rare you find a quarterback that has all of these traits. He was physical. Like, he could run in between the tackles. He could run over backers. I mean, you remember the infamous play against Iowa where he hits the sideline and trucked an Iowa defensive back. And if I'm not mistaken, he broke his collarbone. So this dude had power. This dude was elusive. He could make you miss. I mean, go watch the one of his two big Heisman moments, the 95-yard scramble run against Missouri. I mean, he is making dudes miss left and right. So he was elusive. And then he also had top-end speed. When that guy got to the second level and he had a crease, he was going to house call that thing. And you combine all those things with just a great natural instinct to run, To me, he is the best option quarterback I've ever seen. And what he did in his Heisman Trophy winning season in 2001 was just nothing short of remarkable. Just an incredible season. So reliable, so durable, so dependable, so tough. And, you know, he was a part of one of the five most, maybe even three, I was thinking about this, the most iconic plays in Nebraska football history. I think he got, you know, the Johnny Rogers punt return against Oklahoma. You know, the man, woman, and child, he put him in there. You have that. You have maybe Tommy Frazier's run against Florida in the 95 Fiesta Bowl. You have Matt Davison, you know, the catch against Missouri in 1997. But you also got to have, Black 41 flash reverse, the stunts to Crouch Oklahoma play. And so this is a guy that not only has won a Heisman Trophy, but he was a part of one of the most iconic plays, one of the four or five most iconic plays in Nebraska football history. And so I'm super excited to have you guys listen to this. Eric was awesome. And I thought, you know, he's the perfect guy to have on right now to not only go down memory lane with him, but, you know, what's he seeing with Martinez? What's he seeing with the offense. Is he's, you know, does he think Martinez is uncomfortable? Does what's he seeing with that quarterback spot? And then you know, you forget that he was a teammate of Scott Frost. His redshirt freshman year at Nebraska was 1997, so he was around Frost for an entire year. What was Frost like as a player? So whether it's to talk about Frost, talk about the team, talk about the offense, talk about the quarterback position, he's the perfect guy to have on. And it was interesting that I asked Eric about, you know, what it's like to be the quarterback at Nebraska from a pressure and scrutiny standpoint. I thought his answer was interesting. So this is a thrill. I mean, again, I've you know had Jason Peter on this podcast, and now I'm talking to Eric Crouch. I mean, if you'd have told Nick Baugh from 1995, 1997, 2000, till I was going to be talking to these guys, I'd have fallen over, man. I mean, these guys are like, you know, Husker legends in not only my mind, but a lot of your guys' minds. So without further ado, here is my conversation with former Heisman Trophy winner, former Husker quarterback, Eric Crouch. Well, this is a thrill. Eric Crouch, former Heisman Trophy winner, Millard North Mustang, if you will, joins us now on the Nick Baugh podcast. Eric, man, how's it going, man? This is a thrill. I really appreciate you being on.
I'm doing great, man, and I appreciate you having me on the show, and I'm ready to talk football. I mean, I saw Millard North play this year. They kind of had a tough start, but it looks like they've, like usual, they're coached well, and kids are relentless, and they're starting to play some really good football here in the meat of the season. So I'm hoping the same thing happens in Nebraska.
Yeah, okay, so you bring up going down – I want to go down memory lane a little bit with you, and then we'll get to talking a little bit about this year's Nebraska football team. So you bring up Millard North. You ran the option in high school. So how much did that help you when you got to Nebraska? I'd have to imagine that helped a lot, because it's not necessarily the most natural thing to learn and run.
Well, it's really just a comfort level of making reads quickly. And, you know, a lot of practice with your fullback and with your running backs and your center. Everything's timing, and it happens so fast, and you know, reads change, and you got to make sure that you know you're hooking up with your fullback at the precise time, and that you're giving that read enough time. And then when you pull that ball, you got to know where you're heading to next, and it's all downhill. You should never be running backwards or to the sideline. Everything's got to be great angles. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it was a lot of work. A lot of time with that group of players that I just mentioned, but it makes sense. I mean, you need that type of timing, and you need that camaraderie with your backs to be able to get some late pitches and you know run it at a high rate of success.
Yeah. Did you know? I always kind of call different things, like whether it's running the option or even doing something like a point guard in basketball. Like all of a sudden, you kind of see the offense, and you're almost like Neo in the Matrix. Like you totally understand exactly who you're optioning off of, and all those things. Did that pop for you at Millard North, or did it really pop for you when you got to Nebraska with a totally understanding every single intricacy of running the option?
Well, it popped at Millard North just because we did it so many times. Like the minute I got in there right after eighth grade, going into my freshman year, we're looking up at the center, the fullback, the wingbacks, you know, you pitch me on. We did so much of it. I mean, the timing, the work that you put in, I mean, I just remember the days of, you know, going in before and getting 30 minutes in with your group and then going after school and getting another 30 to 45 minutes in. So at the end of the day, and you're putting in 1 to 1.5 hours of mesh work with those guys, and you do that every day of the week for 4 years in high school, you got that down. And you're right, it is kind of like a certain thing happens around you where things just start to slow down, and you get it. And when I mean slow down, I mean the processing starts to slow down in your head where it's everything's not racing. You just understand it, and you'll be able to like pick up things and react naturally and understand, well, I've got a pitch guy this time. Okay, this time I don't. All right, the fives move to a three. That's my read now. There's just all these things that are happening, and it does take a little bit of time, but, you know, what a fun offense to run. I really miss seeing schools run that, you know, power offense, option attack, because I do feel like it's a good one. It just takes so much time. But I will say this. When zone read became popular, it became popular because of the reason of you're already back there and your angles are all already downhill versus hooking up and finding the fullback. You're so tight to the line, read happens so much faster. But you go to the shotgun, which everybody's running now, and those reads take a little bit longer to develop, so you have more time.
Yeah.
And when you're closer to the line of scrimmage, sometimes you are like a one man away from being tackled.
Right.
One man away from your read versus, you know, back 5 yards. Okay. You got a little space in there, you know, to make things happen. And it doesn't have to happen in such a short window.
Yeah.
So I think that's why everybody's gone to this.
Do you think you'd have been better? Do you think it would have been easier? It sounds like you're saying it would have been easier to run kind of the RPOs with depth and all those things. That's the thing. It's like you're the nose tackle penetrates it all and it can blow up the timing or the entire play. Do you feel like you'd have been better in a true RPO?
I don't know if I necessarily would have been better, but that we wouldn't have had to put in the hours.
Okay.
You know, that's the reason right now that happens is you don't have to put in that much time. You know, you can get a guy back there and, you know, obviously you got to work on your reads and you got to work on the mesh with your running back. But, you know, you don't have to spend the time doing that under center just
right.
Because that happens so much quicker and the angles change. I mean, it's a complicated, you know, but for what we're talking about, the angles change. You don't need to put as much time in it. Most kids can pick that up. And make that read out of shotgun much easier.
Yeah, I was, you know, so getting ready to chat with you last night, I was, you know, reading up and I was watching some old highlight films and I'm with you. I'm a sucker for that style of offense, man. Because that's kind of, I mean, I'm a Nebraska born and raised just like you. That's kind of what we were raised on. I'm not gonna lie, Eric, when Army is on TV, I'm all in, man. I love watching option football.
I'm the same way. It just brings back some great memories. And you understand what they're going through and what it takes to run something so special.
Right.
It's not seen very often. And that's why it's a big offense. It really is. And you know what? You can control the clock.
Yep.
You pretty much dominate the line. I mean, you're going to have to dominate the line of scrimmage. You're taking one, maybe two guys off the defense. Those are your lead guys. So now it's 9 versus 11. I mean, if it's run right, it's hard to stop.
Were you as excited as everyone else was when against Ohio State when the boys got in the wing and ran a little option?
Yeah, I saw that one tight end set. They ran some option and got underneath the read, and Martinez looked pretty natural at that. I'm hoping that that can happen a little bit more, where maybe we shift in and out of that and create a little bit of tension on the defense.
Yeah, Eric, I was listening to Frost talk about. Noah Vedral and how he liked that he was a multi-sport athlete and, you know, he ran track and all those things. You ran track, right? You were a 100 meter guy, right?
I did. I ran track. I ran track at Nebraska, indoor, outdoor. I don't know too many people. I ran in a few meets, not too many of them. I was really recovering from surgeries usually, and I would come out late and these guys would already be in great shape and wouldn't stand a chance. But
right.
yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. High school, college track.
I'd imagine all those things translate on some level. I mean, track, it's like pretty easy to connect the dots. It makes you faster. Like, I mean, because you were one of those guys, even though you had power, like when you got to that second level and there was a seam, you were usually not going to get caught. Like, did you feel like track really made a difference for you in football?
Well, I'm preaching it to my son right now about running track, and he's kind of wavering a little bit. And I hope he makes a good decision to do it, but. You know, I like to compete. I like to train. I like to challenge my body. And I think that's what put me over the edge. I mean, I can't sit here and say, like, I'm the greatest athlete or I was the fastest or the strongest or the smartest. But I would tell you that I did train hard. And I did put in, you know, hours beyond what most people probably were willing to do. And sometimes that's what it takes. Not everybody has... you know, the athletic ability of like a Kyler Murray or, a Russell Wilson, and, or Patrick Mahomes. You know, these guys are super, super gifted at what they're able to do. And, but if you're willing to, put in a little extra time and, put yourself through, the ringer a little bit to improve on your strength and your speed and your confidence, those things usually transcend this a little bit more success, you know, with another sport when you talk about multifaceted sports.
Eric, I want to talk a little bit about your career at Nebraska, and then we'll talk about this year's team. So you redshirted your freshman year. You had ankle surgery, but that was in 1997. What was it like? I kind of hadn't realized that you were – so you were teammates with Frost, right? Like you. So what was it like to be around him every day?
Well, you know, Scott was a natural leader, and I enjoyed seeing, you know, that progression of, you know, him coming, you know, pretty much not liked in a way.
Yeah, no, exactly. People kind of forget about that.
Back from Stanford.
Yeah, right.
And just his ability to, you know, overcome that obstacle is actually, you know, says a lot about him as a person. And I loved seeing that, you know, his leadership at the quarterback position is, you know, if you look at all the teams that have had great teams, typically they've got a very good leader at the quarterback position and one that's, you know, team oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that about Scott. I love his toughness. I love the way he ran the football, with his strength and his speed and size and all those things. But I think more importantly, it becomes his leadership ability to get everybody around him playing at a better and a higher level each and every day. And he definitely had that. That's why he makes a great coach.
What was your relationship like with Bobby Newcomb? Cause you guys both are, you know, you're competing for the starting job. And then ultimately, you know, he was the guy, then you were the guy. And then he moves to kind of wing back wide receiver. What was that relationship like?
Well, I kind of laugh a little bit because we talk about this a lot and, you know, Bobby was like one of the best athletes I've ever seen. And I think, and I don't know what reason it was, whatever reason it was, he seemed to isolate himself,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I hated to see that because we really, really needed him on our team to, you know, communicate, socialize, be part of the team, be part of the family, the brotherhood, the locker room. And I just, you know, he got hurt. And I think ever since he got hurt, his sophomore year, he really struggled. And I think a lot of that was from his injury. It just put him in a tough spot. He probably might be the starting quarterback at Nebraska. I mean, who wouldn't? So I think he, you know, he had some resentment to the program. At that time, and I ended up getting the starting job, and we did connect. I mean, you saw there's a lot of highlights of, mm-hmm. of Bobby, and I think that we did the best job that we could. I mean, we were you know, cordial with each other. You know, we communicated. We had to try a little bit harder, maybe than, you know, what most players had to do to kind of have a good relationship that helped us succeed on the football field. You know, but it wasn't an easy task. And cause I think we were both very competitive people. But you know, I'm happy to see that Bobby is giving back. He's coaching football. I didn't know if he would do that, but I'm really happy to see that. I'm sure he's a wonderful coach. Seen a few interviews, down in Arizona of him, with his high school football program. And he's, you know, he came from the Osborne era and the Solich era. And these guys are, you know, about life. And obviously the game of football has a huge impact on the type of person you can become. And I see that he's instilling those great qualities in his players. So I'm very happy. And hopefully one of these days I'll get a chance to reconnect with him.
Yeah, that's cool. What was it like for you when you weren't the starter and you were the backup? Because Noah Vedral's now kind of dealing with that, understanding that you're really one play away from being out there. And so it's hard. You got to prepare each week, not knowing necessarily what could or might not happen. What was that process like for you? I know you ultimately, you know, seized the job and you were the man, but there was a period where it was kind of you and Bobby kind of didn't know who was going to be the starter and or what was going to happen.
Yeah, it was almost a year and a half of my career at Nebraska that I lived that life every day.
Yeah.
And my whole entire freshman year was like that. They didn't name a starter until, you know, the night before the game or the day of the game.
Mm.
So that put us in a pretty competitive position. And, you know, I remember, you know, Bobby and Monty and Frankie and myself and, you know, we're all going through this this competitive battle every week between four players. And, you know, it was just, let's see who has the best week and let's go with that guy. I remember getting the starting job, you know, 8 of those 11 weeks. And I think a lot of that had to do with just, you know, preparation for the game during the week of practice. And then obviously the more opportunity you get in a game, then you get to see, okay, this guy can really do it in a game situation, not just practice, but would excel more even in a game type situation. So I think that gave me the edge. You know, obviously when you're not the guy, you have to be ready because, you never know. And maybe it's one, maybe he's not playing well and all of a sudden you're in. Maybe he gets hurt like Martinez did or Bobby Newcomb gets hurt and I get my chance and you've got to be ready. And so it's probably the most difficult position on the team as a backup QB because you have to be just as prepared and you may not have the reps in practice, but you have to be ready to go out and continue to lead your offense down the field. And that can be a really tough job.
Yeah, when you think about when you ultimately did take the, you know, you're the guy, you're the starter. When did it all really click for you confidence wise? Like when did the confidence really explode at Nebraska for you and being like, man, not only can I play, I can be like a big time difference maker here.
Probably my third game of my sophomore year when I was named the starter finally. Kind of win. I think that's when I was like, okay, I think now it's time to set all this stuff aside and move forward as the man, as the leader, as the quarterback. And, you know, I looked at it as almost a sense of relief in a way that like, okay, now I don't have to be on pins and needles to make a mistake. Now I can go take maybe more risks than I would have willing to take before to make bigger plays happen and not feel like I was going to be, you know, sat on the bench for it. So I think it freed me up in a way to play with little fear of making any mistakes. And, you know, I think our best season, obviously, actually, our best team, our best year was probably 99, my sophomore year.
Yeah.
We lost a heartbreaker down in Austin that we could have easily won. But if we probably would have won that game, my guess is we probably would have went on to play the national title and win it that year.
I mean, you guys were great that year. What's that like now? Because the one thing I've talked about is I think Frost is a player's coach, and I think a lot of people use that cliche, and people kind of don't know exactly what they mean by that. And one of the things that player's coach means is he truly understands what it's like to play and understands the mindset of a player. And a part of that is allowing your guys to go play through mistakes to not be looking over their shoulder. But there always is that line too, Eric, of like you know, there has to be consequences for not playing well too. As I'd imagine that's kind of interesting now that you're looking at it from the outside looking in, where it's like you understand everything you just said, if you didn't have to look over your shoulder, but there's also that element of like, well, this guy's not getting it done. Those are kind of two things you have to balance that's kind of challenging about being a coach.
You know, I see it. I agree. I think there's another side to being a player's coach. I think that's just being real with your players and being able to talk to them all. I don't think all head coaches, you know, have these, you know, great relationships with their players. And sometimes I feel like, you know, the head coach is going to be willing to, you know, spend a little extra time, whether it's, you know, in the meeting room, whether it's outside in the hallway of, you know, whether it's on a walk from the stadium to the practice field, maybe it's during practice that you're spending a little time getting to know some of the players. And I think Scott does that. And I think that's where the players really, you know, obviously he played there, he's won a national title. I mean, they know that. But to really respect your coach and to have a relationship with him is different. And I think that's where, you know, Scott will be able to say he's a player's coach. We saw how emotional University of Central Florida players were when, you know, he announced that he was going to leave and come to Nebraska. And, you know, we saw that on national television, and it was really cool. You knew he was going to be bringing that same type of culture to Nebraska. I think that's what we're all excited about seeing.
What did you have that relationship with? Was it Coach Sulich? Was it Turner Gill? Did you feel ultimately when you were the guy? Were you able to settle in and really feel comfortable with those guys?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, I knew Tom Osborne and he helped recruit me, but he left after my freshman year. And I've actually had a better relationship with Coach Osborne afterwards. But my relationship with Turner Gill and Frank Solich, you know, was, you know, very good. You know, at the beginning, I was in this competitive situation and, you know, they were great. You know, they were very honest. And that's what I respect about them. And, you know, they let us go out and compete. I mean, they could have picked the guy and said, that's it, and never looked back. But they let us compete, and I think they wanted to put the best player on the field, and that's how I got on it, and that's how I earned it.
The 2001 season, you know, unfortunately, I know you've talked about this a million times, but I got to ask you about Black 41 Flash Reverse. I mean, it's one of the five most iconic plays in Nebraska football history. When was it installed? What did you think when you first saw the play? Did you think you were going to run it in that game? Give me something on Black 41 Flash Reverse.
Well, we came into meetings on Monday, and Frank Solich had the screen down. This is when we had, you know, the working pull down screen.
Yep.
Projector. So he pulls the screen down, and we're all having a meeting, and he's going through, you know, special teams, and they get to the offensive strategy, and up goes the screen, and here's this play on the board. He says, this is, you know, Black Flash 41 reverse pass, and this is how we're going to run it, and this is how it's going to work. And they all kind of looked around, and then he showed a video. And the video was the history of Nebraska and Oklahoma and how many trick plays had actually been in this history. And if you ever had time to look at it, I mean, there was a lot more trickery in this matchup than I'd ever seen in my life. And so I understood kind of what was happening. And I think Oklahoma understood that too, because they put this almost the same exact play in and ran it in our game before we ran ours. Mm-hmm. And so I always say it's impressive that we both had very similar trick plays in the game. Ours happened to work. However, I preface that by saying it never worked during the week of practice. So it was either an interception, a fumble, bad timing, an incomplete pass, it never worked. So we scratched it. You know, Coach Solich said, it's out. It's out of game plan. We're not going to use it. And then Coach Turner Gill goes, yeah, that's right, it's out. So anyway, in the game, Frank Solich calls the play, and I really tried my best to not turn around and say, well, this isn't in the playbook. You know? So it's not in the game plan, Coach. I didn't want to get in an argument. You know, I don't want to chip anybody off if some trickery is coming. So we had to kind of play it, you know, you had to be an actor there. Well, anyway, the rest is history. Mike Stuntz threw a beautiful pass. You know, he always had the tightest spiral. You know, mine's a wobbler. He's got the tightest spiral out there. And I just remember that ball. He's left-handed, so it hits my hands and kind of jumbles around a little bit. And thank God I caught that, because I can't imagine what people would be saying if I wanted to catch that ball.
I was in the stands, and you talk to people like, I mean, that's not all roars from a Memorial Stadium crowd are created equal. What did the roar feel like as you were the one making the play? Did it feel like, were you like, wow, this is louder than usual?
Well, I don't hear the crowd very often, but right. I will say that after that touchdown, I did hear the crowd, and I knew at that point that we were going to win the football game.
Oh yeah.
And it wasn't a doubt in my mind. And so I mean, it was pretty tight. I mean, it was only up by 3 or something, but after that score, our energy was at an all-time high. Our defense was playing extremely well. And, I don't think we had the best offensive day. It was a very defensive day. I don't know how many yards we had rushing, but it wasn't like the best of the best. I mean, Oklahoma had very good defense that year. And we were just lucky. I mean, it's the biggest win that I remember being part of. And it was great to have it in Memorial Stadium there in Lincoln. You know, Oklahoma was ranked number one. So it doesn't get any better than that. I'm studying the number one team in the country.
Absolutely. How much did you think about the Heisman during the 2001 season? Was it a goal? Was it something you thought about?
It wasn't a goal. I tried not to think about it. You know, people would bring it up often. And And I would always kind of have a rebuttal of, no, I don't even want to win that. You know, just weird things like that that I would say to try to keep my mind off of any personal or team or any type of trophies or awards that are given out at the end of the season. I just wanted to play the game. I just wanted to compete. I just wanted to win. I wanted to be the best prepared team and player that I could be. And I just figured that all those things would just, they would settle every year they do. You know, the vote doesn't really matter. And, you know, I just was able to leave it in their hands and enjoy the atmosphere and walked away with pretty good hardware.
You know, In kind of our culture, there are only a few really iconic, prestigious honors or awards someone could get, whether it's an Oscar or a Grammy. And I mean, the Heisman Trophy is on that list. How life altering is it now that you're now that you've had it, gosh, for almost 20 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out, by the way.
Your hairline still looks good, you know, Eric. It still looks you still got that rock solid hairline, man. You still look like you can go out there and do it.
Well, I'm gonna try to bank on that as long as I can. You know, I'm very you know, every day is different with the trophy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of opportunity. I've got to meet some incredible people. You know, I thought about making a list of all the people that I've met over the years, and it's just, I stopped at one point. I'm like, I can't do this. I just met people that I never thought that I would meet. Just being invited back and welcoming the new winner and then meeting, you know, maybe a previous winner that I haven't met has always been a lot of fun too. And just getting to know those guys and hear their stories and see how similar we all were at that time in our careers, the things that we were doing. And then also, even afterwards, I mean, we still all have something in common. And it's a really good group of guys that, you know, come together and have fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a good thing to be part of. I'm very thankful. I do always want to mention that I would have never been able to do that, or receive that award without a great coaching staff and incredible teammates. In a great university, it's just that, you know, I want to make sure that people do understand that football is not a one-man show.
Right.
It is the ultimate team sport, and that's why the university also receives a trophy as well.
We're going to get to the season here after this question, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I've being the quarterback at Nebraska is an unbelievable honor, but it comes with an immense amount of pressure and scrutiny. I mean, if you're the starting quarterback at Nebraska, you're instantly one of the five biggest names in the state of Nebraska. You understand that, Eric? What was that like for you? What's that burden like? That pressure like? Because I think there's some people that deal with it better than others, and that's a real thing. Take me back to, you know, 1998, 99, 2000, 2001. What was that like for you?
You know, my first road game was Cal Berkeley in 98. You know, when I got out there, I was scared to death. I was hurt. I had a pulled hamstring. And I had to go out there on the road and win a football game. And I was nervous. You know, I didn't sleep for two or three days. Definitely didn't sleep the night before the game. And I walked outside, and when I was outside the stadium for the first time, I noticed that there were more Nebraska fans than their fans. And that's when I took a deep breath and I said, you know what? They're on our side. And so at that point, I didn't really feel the pressure from anywhere in the state or in the country. It was just a great feeling to know that you have support from the outside, whether it was media, fans, you know, kids, moms, dads, you name it. You just had a tremendous amount of support.
Right.
And I didn't really ever think, pressure is never a word in my vocabulary. I didn't ever think about that. I was just, I just laser focused in on becoming a better football player and, you know, keeping my teammates tight. and our coaches tight, and making sure that I was, you know, dead set and focused on things that were going to help us become the best football team that we could.
Yeah.
And I started having fun. And when you're starting to have fun, you know, and you're working hard and you're winning football games and you're training at the highest level, there's just something that takes the pressure off. And I couldn't imagine. I mean, because that's not the case right now. And so I think they are feeling a little bit of pressure to try to be what we once were. And I think Scott's got a, you know, a tough job,
right,
to relay that message to the players that, you know, let's just take this one step at a time. I mean, we're not going to, you know, win a national championship this year, you know, and just let those players, those kids, just play loose and have fun and feel good about playing college football and being at that position that they're at in their life, because it does go by very fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect segue into this year, and I really wanted to kind of pick your brain on Adrian Martinez. You know, because sometimes we project these narratives. He looks nervous. He doesn't look comfortable or whatever. I mean, sometimes, I don't know. I mean, that's just what it may look like through the TV screen. We don't know that to necessarily be true or not. But I don't know. There is some times where I don't feel like he's looked quite as comfortable. What are you seeing? As a guy that's played the position, what have you seen from Martinez here in the first six games?
Yeah, I think I've seen and thought about all those things, too. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with timing. I mean, I really haven't seen their timing as good as that was last year. We all know he's got incredible athleticism and can throw every throw, and he makes some incredible throws. And he's got a nice, strong arm, and he's smart and intelligent, great leader. I think what I've seen that's just missing is just chemistry with, you know, several of his receivers. You know, having Stanley Morgan last year, I think, helped. They had pretty good chemistry. You know, one guy can make a big difference. I think Wandell Robinson is an amazing athlete. He's going to be a superstar at Nebraska. Spielman, I mean, whatever it is, you know, if you start getting hit and hit and hit and hit, that's what you start thinking about back there. And I really hope that we start to see and get rid of the ball a little bit sooner. There's some shorter timing throws just to get comfortable. And then that's when that opens up that big play downfield. We all know that he can make those plays. So I believe in him.
Right.
And I think he's going to do really well at Nebraska and have a tremendous career. Obviously, staying healthy is a big part of that. I mean, you can ask Bobby Newcomb, you can ask other guys, you can ask me. I mean, I lived in the training room. I got beat up. I had 600 or 700 carries at Nebraska. I understand it. And so you got to be able to, you know, stay injury free. Otherwise, you know, there's the next man up philosophy. And especially at Nebraska, you have to have a quarterback, number two, that can go in and just as effectively run this offense.
Yeah. I think it's always you want to find whether it's a short passing game, or sometimes I think for Martinez, it's when he gets a couple of good runs under his belt, he kind of settles in too. Where do you come out of that? Because you bring up the fact that you had, you know, 600 or 700 carries, 600 or 700 carries. I think I looked it up in 2001, you averaged a little over 16 a game was what I think it ultimately it averaged out at. Where do you see the whole dynamic of kind of being careful about running your quarterback too much versus ultimately he's a really good runner and you want to find some rhythm in that regard? How do you balance that as someone that, you know, not only ran the ball as a quarterback, but ran it tough?
Well, I mean, it's different now. I will say that. I mean, we had, you know, a bunch of running backs too that were able to carry the load and, you know, average 3 or 4 yards or more a carry, and that helped me stay on the field. But, you know, I think that's one thing that we've been missing is kind of like a lot of depth at the running back position. And now that we've been throwing the ball a lot over the last decade, you know, that running back position, I'm excited to see it come back. I mean, I think we've got some good ones, and, they probably obviously, I would vote from the philosophy is if you're going to be successful throwing the football, then you definitely have to be successful running it. So I think that's where we get sometimes put in a situation where maybe we're not running the ball as well as we want to. And then that puts an added pressure on the throwing game. There's so many things in football. Maybe we're not getting enough on first and second so that we're in some easy throws on third. Or maybe even running the football on third down for first. So, I mean, I'm not criticizing.
Right. No,
I'm saying what I'm seeing. And I know the staff down there is working to get better and, you know, coaching guys up and it's getting, you know, more talent and working with the talent that you have and coaching those guys up. And look, I've got the most respect for this coaching staff. So I think they're doing a great job and just going to take some time.
You bring up timing and different things. How much do you think the high snaps for Martinez have kind of thrown things off a little bit?
Well, there's no doubt about that. You got to have consistent snaps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're jumping up for a snap or you're moving to the side. That disrupts everything. I know we got a young center. I know that he hasn't played that position for very long. So, you know, that's a tough one too.
Yeah.
You know, so you start saying, okay, there's the snaps. There's the inconsistency in the running game. There's, you know, maybe we're third and long too much. Okay. Maybe there's a little bit more pressure because the quarterback gets all those things add up. And, you know, penalties don't help. I've seen too many penalties this year. And usually they're in a pretty disciplined team. So I think that's something that they definitely want to keep working on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. Again, for the record, I'm all in on Martinez. I think the kid's a stud. Like, he's shown you flashes and he showed you a lot last year. And I think they're just, for whatever reason, it's, you know, Stanley Morgan not being there, maybe some high snaps. And you, like you said, you get hit a few times, you start kind of thinking about some things. It feels like there's just been kind of a lot working against him for him to find a rhythm and a flow. But I believe in this coaching staff. I think they're ultimately going to get the necessary pieces around him for him to flourish. And so I still am really excited about what old number two is going to be able to do, ultimately at Nebraska.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one too. I think that I hope he's got an injury that's you know, able to recover here and get back on the field, you know, for the team. In the meantime, I do feel like Noah Zedrill will be that guy where he can come in and run this offense. You know, he's been with Scott for a while, and he seems mature. And when I've seen him get in the game, I've seen him you know, run with some intensity and some decisiveness, and I really like seeing that. He's got some good wheels. He's athletic. He can throw the ball. I think that will definitely help Nebraska down the stretch, or, you know, this week even.
Yeah.
I mean, you need two guys. There's just no way about it.
Yeah, and the thing that's also probably because, I mean, it's what we talked about with your career, like he – at least right now, Vedrill can have an entire week where he, you know, who knows what's going to happen on Saturday with the game, but he can kind of start mentally really preparing himself like he truthfully is going to be the guy. What would, if you could talk to Vedrill, like what would you, any advice that would maybe help him out as he's going to be able to potentially get his very first start?
Yeah, I just keep doing what he's doing. I'm sure he prepares well. You can tell because he comes in and he performs. But I think he knows how to prepare. He understands it. It's about going out and just playing football, having some fun. You know, let your hair down and smile the whole time. You're going to get hit. That's part of the game. You're not going to make every throw. That's part of the game. Shoot, you might even have a fumble or a turnover. But part of the game is coming back and throwing a touchdown pass after something bad happens, or getting a first down, or you know, doing something big for your team, running somebody over, putting your shoulder down and getting your team jacked up and changing the momentum of the game. And I think he can do that.
Yeah.
I really believe in that. And I think that, you know, if he plays like he has in the past, everybody knows what he's capable of. He's going to believe in himself. I'm sure his teammates do, and he'll be just fine.
You know, Eric, we talk about, you know, a lot of people I think had the year two Central Florida thing in their head, combined with how the season finished last year, and people set an expectation level that maybe was too high And I think most Husker fans understand that this is going to be a process. But I think there has been progress, Eric. I think there's three games this year that I don't know if they'd have won last year. I don't know if they beat Northwestern like they did this past weekend. Illinois on the road to have to come back from 14 down. Even the South Alabama game, you never know. So I guess for you, I've seen progress. What kind of progress has jumped out to you so far here in a season and a half with Frost's arrival?
We're already at 4 wins. That's progress.
Yeah.
I think that some things may not be noticeable, you know, to the common fan or maybe even some of the media. But they're still building a culture, and there's still a lot of players on that team that were part of the past. And to get everybody to fully buy in and to fully understand it, it does take, I mean, I hate to be the cliche and say it, but it takes time.
Yeah.
And it's a process, and it doesn't have to, I mean, when you talk about the process, I mean, it took Coach Alvin how many years for him to win a, you know, national titles and play like that in the 90s. I mean, many years. And so it's not easy to do. And it could take 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody wants it to happen in year two. And I do too. I got my hand up right now. I mean, that's me right now. I want it. But it's not there yet. And I think every one of us sees it, especially after a game against the, you know, now many people think Ohio State is the best team in the country. And my opinion is they did look like that.
Yeah.
And they have looked like that. And they probably are one of the top three teams in the country. One of them. And so that's the, you know, the, what we're up against and where we need to get to. And it's really good for us to play teams like that so that we see, you know, what it's going to take and where we need to go, and talk about timing and team chemistry and athleticism and strength and speed and just how they run and operate during the game. And so we're learning from all those things. And, you know, I just expect that every week we do something a little bit better.
Right.
And a little bit, you know, play with a little bit more heart and intensity. And so they'll start to change.
I think there's no question that from a progress standpoint, I think the defense has taken a big step. I think what Shenander's done with that group, and it's largely the same guys that from a year ago, I think that team is or that side of the ball is dramatically improved. As a quarterback, like when you watch this Nebraska defense now, what would be tough about going against this Blackshirt defense? Because they are a pretty aggressive crew.
Yeah, they create, you know what, they move around well. You know, the secondary, I mean, one of the things I've noticed that Colorado game is these guys are flying. And I like seeing that from a defense, just playing, you know, get to your reads fast and then play fast. I mean, even if you don't quite know where you're going, just go fast, you know, full
yeah.
speed. That can just playing at a high level, a very high level of energy, and low and, you know, that's one thing I've noticed this year is just getting. Last year, sometimes in years in the past, we just weren't even close to being able to make a play. But I see we're getting closer to the ball. We are in a position, in a better position to make a play. Now, we're not always making the play that we probably need to make, but we're getting closer to being in the right position to make those plays. And you're seeing that now with our turnover ratio.
Yep.
You're seeing that now with the takeaways. And I think Shenander's group is, you know, hats off to what those guys are still doing and working towards, because if we improve off that, that could be a really, you know, cool thing to see this Blackshirt name and theme and stuff start to come alive again.
Do a little rapid fire here, kind of a deal to wrap this up, Eric. I appreciate your time. I guess are you at peace with your career? I mean, college-wise, I'm sure the answer is a resounding yes. You won the freaking Heisman. But, you know, in the NFL, obviously, there was kind of the position change. And then you couldn't catch a break with staying healthy. Are you at peace with everything now?
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. I've got a good life. I've got, you know, wonderful wife and kids, and it's a nice small business, and great friends and family, and you know, that's what you need to kind of get through some of those tough times. Did my football career be able to go the way that I planned it? Completely, absolutely not. But I met some great people. I tried to do everything that I could to play this game the longest I could, and that's what I recommend to everybody who is has any doubt in their mind what they want to do when it comes to playing for play it as long as you can, because there's something that at some point in life when you turn, you know, I mean, there's Tom Brady, and there are a few guys that turn over 40 and they can still get it done, but it's an anomaly. It doesn't happen too often. So you play this game as long as you can, so you never look back and you never say, what if I did that? What if I did this?
Right.
You know, you always want to be able to answer the question, and I did that. I answered it, and I said, you know what, I did everything I had for as long as I could, and you know, I've got nothing to hold back for that.
What if you kind of had to sum up in a couple of sentences your criteria for your Heisman vote? What kind of gets your vote when you look at things? Because that's, some people just, oh, it's the best player on the best team. It's just like, how do you approach it now?
And there's been years where I approach it. I try to do my best in following the mission and, you know, a person of integrity,
yep,
great leader, good in the classroom, a winner on the football field, great teammate. You know, and it always comes down to who, you know, I got to do my research. You know, if I'm really going to make the best educated vote, I've got to look at who is the best player in the country. And there's been times I've voted where, you know, names are on my ballot that probably weren't even invited. There's many people that have that vote that aren't even invited. But I've done that several times where I felt like this guy was the best for these reasons. Well, you know, maybe he had the most rushing yards in the country or close to it, but didn't have the lines, that didn't have the line,
yeah,
or didn't have the team or the defense, you know, and this guy really, man, if you put him in with Alabama's line, can you imagine? Or you put this guy, you could pretty much say that, okay, well, if we put this guy in Alabama, then everybody's a Heisman Trophy winner. you got to break it down, you know, mm-hmm. But there's some criteria out there.
Give me the under the radar great player you played with at Nebraska. Like, there's got to be, there's always someone that maybe people don't give enough love for. Was there a guy on defense, a running back, a fullback? Give me a guy that you was just a stud that maybe doesn't get enough run.
Wow. You know, there were a lot of those guys. I mean, it's hard to name one because there were so many of those guys on Nebraska's team that, you know, we had walk-ons that could have started. You had, you know, second and third team guys that were right close. I mean, you know, when we had 200 players on the team, you know, you throw the second team out there, it was like we never missed a beat.
Right.
They're still dominating. There was, I mean, it'd be hard to, honestly, that's one question you got me stumped, because I've been there on a lot. And really a hats off to all those guys that, you know, worked so hard, but really probably didn't see the field as much as they deserved to.
Yeah, I was going through some of the rosters, just going through, and it's like, man, baller, 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 baller.
You know, just Scott Stanley didn't play a whole lot in Nebraska, had a great NFL career.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
It is.
It's just amazing. The depth that existed there late in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s was just incredible. Did you like broadcasting? Did you enjoy it?
I did. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it was a lot of fun. I liked being at the live games, being up in the booth. Didn't enjoy the studio stuff as much. I liked the excitement of the game and interviewing the players and coaches and getting prepared for game day. That was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, it's you know, because what I do with college basketball, it's a way to stay around the game, you know, like it's just you kind of get your there's nothing like playing, but you get your fix. I'd say as a father of a 3-year-old daughter, I got to give you a big you're doing impactful playground equipment work, because her, like, my whole basically my daughter every day is like, we got to go to the park. I mean, how is that business going, man? Is it going well?
Yeah. It's been a good business for us. We cover South Dakota and Nebraska, so we do some drive time and get the windshield and all that. But we end up, what I've said many times is that it's been a great way for, I didn't realize that this, the business aside, but I didn't realize that I would get a chance to go to all these small towns where you've got great people, great Husker fans, and be able to just, you know, say thank you to them and give back and work on projects. And it's been really neat for me travel this area of geography for us, because it's given back to my business and it's supported our employees and my family, and it's been a lot of fun. We've really enjoyed doing what we do.
So, you know, again, I appreciate you doing this. And people don't know that. So my cousin is Mick Botner. Mick and you are longtime buddies. So, I mean, was this the ultimate favor for Mick? Like, did he give you that text like, hey, my annoying cousin wants you to come on his podcast? Was that what this was, Eric?
No, not at all. Not at all. But, you know, Mick's got an influence on me.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Known for a while.
There's no doubt. This was great, Eric, man. I'm a huge fan. You're my all-time favorite quarterback at Nebraska.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was so much fun to watch you play. This was a thrill to kind of pick your brain. Hopefully we can do it again, man.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me on.
Thanks, Eric.
A Parkville Media Production.